Hi, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy, the monthly show about homeopathy in general and its use in the treatment of autism in particular. My name's Amy Lansky, and I'm pre-recording this month's show because I'm going to be traveling on May 19th when you're all listening to this. Now, for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I want to encourage you to listen to past archives of the show for several reasons. First of all, I'm sort of developing the show as a kind of course in homeopathy, so it helps to have listened to the previous shows, although it's not strictly necessary. Each show really does stand on its own. Just to let you know about the previous shows, January's show was a general introduction to homeopathy. In the February show, I talked about how my own son was cured of autism with homeopathy. So many of you will be interested in hearing that story in detail. March's show was a very important show. It was an introduction to homeopathic philosophy and the homeopathic view of cure and disease. So for those of you considering homeopathic treatment for your child, I really suggest you listen to the show because you'll really understand better what homeopathy is all about and the way homeopaths will be viewing your case. The April show, I reported on a talk I gave at the National Center for Homeopathy conference that month, where I talked about autism treatment in particular using homeopathy. And in fact, over the next, there'll be several other shows that elaborate more on that topic, including today's show. Now, the next thing I really want to encourage you all to do, and I do this on every show, is to encourage you to buy my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. First of all, that book is really the basis of this show. And in a sense, this show is sort of a course based on that book. It's not only one of the best-selling books on homeopathy in the United States now, but it's really a book that many homeopathic practitioners use to educate their patients. In fact, it's becoming one of the most popular books for patient education. So you will really understand what homeopathy is all about and how it can help you and your family much better if you read this book. It includes stories of cure not just for autism, but also for many other ailments. So you'll learn how not just your autistic child can benefit from homeopathy, but how you and the rest of your family can as well. So I also want to encourage all of you who are listening to this show and using homeopathy to consider contributing to a Cure Stories database. So let me tell you a bit more about my website. If you want to find out more about buying Impossible Cure, the best place to find out is from the book's website, which is impossiblecure.com. And it will tell you how to buy Impossible Cure, which is basically on Amazon online or through various homeopathic booksellers. That's explained on the website. You can also buy, by the way, buy in bulk at a discount. So you might consider that if you have a group of people who want to buy the book. Also on the website is a specific page about autism, and that includes referrals to various practitioners. Many people contact me are interested in that, so that information is also on the website. And also on the website is this Cure Stories database, which is stories that people have contributed about their cure that you can read, and you can also contribute your own. And if you have had success with homeopathy, please do contribute your story to this database because it really encourages other families to give it a try. You can really help another family by doing that. Now, another important homeopathic resource I encourage you all to explore is the National Center for Homeopathy. This is the leading open membership organization in the United States that's protecting and promoting homeopathy. It's open to everyone. Practitioners belong, also patients and students, and really anybody who's interested in homeopathy. Their website is www.homeopathic.org, which is HOMEOPATHIC.org. Wow. If you go to that site, one of the things you're going to find out about is that this year, one of the National Center's projects is to air an excellent video about homeopathy called Homeopathy, Mystery of Healing. It's going to be airing on various channels, in particular to about 15 million households in the United States in the next 6 months. So you might check their schedule and see if you can watch it where you are. Now, by joining the National Center, you're not only supporting and helping to protect homeopathy in this country, you'll also get lots of other benefits. You'll get a subscription to Homeopathy Today, which is a really great educational tool. You'll learn about how to treat your family for common ailments like colds and flu and hay fever. You'll read about other stories of cure and what's going on in the world of homeopathy. If you become a member, you also get various online goodies like Homeopathy Today available online, web chat rooms, a facility where you can read about various remedies, many articles, and a facility for keeping track of the remedies for each flu season. The National Center also offers study groups that might be local in your area where you can learn with other parents. The National Center also has a yearly conference and a summer school. They have referral lists, resources, and now they also have an e-newsletter that comes out 6 times a year. So there's just many benefits that you get by joining the National Center, but the most important thing is that you're supporting their work to help protect and promote homeopathy. Now, before we start today's show, I also want to remind you all that you can always contact me, even though I'm not live today. Normally, you can email me questions live, but you can always send me an email either at alansky@autism1.org. So that's A-L-A-N-S-K-Y at autism1.org, or to me at my book website as Lansky, L-A-N-S-K-Y, at impossiblecure.com. And I always respond to parents that write to me. So last month, as I said, I began a discussion of homeopathic treatment of autism in particular. And we're going to continue that today with an interview of one of our country's leading homeopaths, John Malnichuk, who also just happens to be the homeopath who treated my son Max. And he's now treating many other autistic children. And in fact, many children with other handicaps as well, such as cerebral palsy. John is a native of Edmonton, Alberta in Canada, and he's a graduate of the London College of Classical Homeopathy in England. He's a certified classical homeopath and a member of the Society of Homeopaths in North America. And he's also the president of the California Health Freedom Coalition. In fact, I'm on the board of that organization as well. And that organization successfully passed a health freedom bill in California in 2002. And John was really the center, everything about that campaign. He really enabled homeopaths to practice freely in our state of California. So welcome, John.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. Let me turn myself around here so I can face you when we're talking. So, welcome.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So why don't we start by you telling us about how you became interested in homeopathy.
My involvement with homeopathy began in the early 80s. I was unwell myself. I have a kind of arthritis that runs in my family that I inherited from one of my uncles and my grandmother. And I had an experience at the Mayo Clinic after many years of unsuccessful treatment and diagnosis by other physicians in Canada. And when I got to the Mayo Clinic, I had my visits there, and they said, well, we think you have this particular kind of arthritis, and we haven't got a very good treatment for it, so we think you should look for some kind of alternative medicine, maybe biofeedback or something. That was one of the best experiences of my life, to find out that a doctor told me he didn't have an answer for my problem, and this is what led me to homeopathy ultimately. As I searched for some other kind of treatment which had the possibility to improve my health, I found homeopathy, and it's become the love of my life and one of the most helpful things for me. Although I use other kinds of treatments as well from time to time, including acupuncture, osteopathy, meditation, and I control my diet. So I'm very lucky to be having homeopathy as my primary source of medicine. It's still the best thing for me, and overall, of all the different therapies I've tried, it is the most reliably helpful for me.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you tell our listeners a bit about your practice, what kind of patients you see, in general?
I have a general practice in Palo Alto, California, but I'm now treating people all over the U.S. and in some other countries now. I have a generally mixed practice. Most of the people who consult with me from outside the country or outside the state have autistic children or brain injured children. About half of my time is spent working with brain injured children and autistic children. So from cerebral palsy to children with Asperger's syndrome, behavioral disorders, ADHD, learning disabilities, and so on. I also will treat adults for many different kinds of conditions. But the most fun, I think, for me is to treat children. And it's progress comes sooner, and the results are generally deeper and faster.
And you can make a big change on the rest of their life. That's really rewarding.
This is the primary. If you change somebody's life when early on, their potential will be expanded. And this is what we all want for our children, is that they meet their potential in life.
So tell me, if you're a parent, most of the people listening to the show are parents, what would their first appointment be like with you? What's it like to go to the first appointment with an autistic child, and how can they prepare for that appointment?
It's long. In general, I'll spend up to 2.5 hours, occasionally longer, with parents. I'd like to meet the child if I can. If it's not possible for the family to travel to see me, I'll review a video tape. But in general, it'll take me about 2.5 hours to do a workup. And what I'll want to know is everything about your child, all the past medical treatments, all the other alternative treatments. Most of all, what I want to get a sense of is your child's individual disposition and temperament, and if there's any peculiar or outstanding characteristics about their symptomatology, I'd like to know this as well. And it takes some time. I'd also want to know about the family history of ailments and illnesses, generally how the family's getting along, and what the impact of having an unwell child is on the family, whether that's been has really shaken your family up, or whether it's, as it most often is, or whether it's something that your family has come to terms with and is rather more relaxed about and hopeful about. So the attitude of the family is one of the things that I'm most interested in finding out about as well, because that has a key impact on all the outcomes, I think.
So give some examples of the kind of symptoms that you might be looking for in a child.
Well, I'm interested to know the general level of functioning overall, to begin with. So I'd like to know, in the case of autism, whether the child has speech or has progressed from not having speech to having some verbalization, or to see whether the child is aware of other people or interacting with them or responding to them, whether the child makes eye contact, and also what the physical symptoms are associated with this, whether the child has digestive or bowel problems, which are very frequent in this population. I'm also interested to know what the characteristic behavior is, if there's a kind of perseveration, if your child does something over and over again, or whether there's stimming, or whether there's various types of behavior which would be antisocial, or if your child is sensitive to the noise from the television and tells you to turn it off or makes you turn it off when it's playing. There's all kinds of different things I'm interested in knowing. And I can't predict what I want to know, but whatever's there, I'll try and find a solution from.
What about things that have nothing to do with autism?
These are most helpful of all. I mean, there's different ways to use homeopathy and different ways to look at treating any individual. The best way and the most consistently deep results come from treating a person as an individual, even apart from their autism. So if it's possible to determine what the temperament and disposition is of a child, even through the haze of autism, the best result will come, because I can find the best medicine most quickly. In many cases, though, I see the children are suffering such physical symptoms that their individuality is in some way obscured. So what they present with is a kind of range of symptoms which are very common to autism. Stimming, flapping of arms, lack of eye contact, very little interest in food, tantrums or self-injurious behavior, or scratching behavior towards others, hitting heads, things like this, or asking for deep pressure on different parts of the body. These are all quite common and characteristic symptoms belonging to most children who have some experience with autism. Those symptoms themselves are useful to know, but they're not reliably individual enough to be able to give an opportunity to give a very, very deep remedy for somebody. It would be like treating a syndrome, like treating the flu or treating a cold, treating autism, treating depression, treating menstrual problems, rather than treating the individual, your child. And in homeopathy, we talk a lot about, as Amy, I'm sure, has talked about in previous shows, that the treatment of the individual is the most important thing overall. And if I could find an individual solution for your child, the symptoms of autism will resolve. And I prefer to do this rather than trying to find a medicine for autism itself.
So give an example of one, like a case of something that was very individual about that child that somehow pointed you to the remedy.
I think one of the symptoms I had for one child was that there was a particular kind of behavior that the child would engage in, and he would lie on the carpet in front of me and wiggle as a kind of fish, that he would undulate his head and his feet in the opposite direction and wiggle. And one of the medicines I gave for him on that basis was a remedy made from cod liver oil. And oleum jacoris is the Latin name for it. Mm. And this was a very helpful remedy for this child for quite a long time. And his speech and eye contact improved a lot. And as many of you know, fish oils are often recommended to help nutritional disturbances with a child in autism. It has a lot of vitamin A and other sorts of things which will help to heal a digestive tract and provide the environment in which the brain can operate properly. So that was just one physical sign that I saw of a child, apart from anything else. The child, of course, didn't speak when he came in and wouldn't make eye contact and wasn't that interested and oblivious to other children and other adults. So over time, as we gave this remedy, the child got more well and became more socially receptive and began to do parallel play with other kids rather than being oblivious to them. And eventually he went on to do some interactive play. I haven't seen this child for a while now, but over time, his progress has continued very well.
Okay, so let's see. So what kind of response in general do you think patients get to a remedy? What can parents expect after they get a remedy that's tailored to their child?
It depends on many factors. It's a complicated question to answer because it depends, for one thing, on how unwell or how damaged the child is when he comes to me or any other person. The more severe the damage, if there's a lot of organic damage in the child where there's a lack of social ability, a lack of social awareness, lack of expressive speech, and problems in receptive speech, where the child doesn't respond to your requests or commands or even your affection, plus if the child has bowel problems, things like that, the results generally come more slowly. Whereas if there's only one system of the body which is more damaged, perhaps only the brain or only the gut, things tend to go more quickly. So that's it's a difficult thing to say, to make a blanket statement about where we are. It's individual for every single person I see, and the results come at varying rates.
So what's the fastest you ever saw?
I think the fastest I saw a kid recover a lot was in about 4 or 5 months, where I had one child who was very, very shy, and there was a number of factors in his favor. He had some speech. He had a diagnosis of mild autism, and his gut was not so damaged, but he had real social problems and a big issue about his social behavior. He wouldn't speak, and he was not that obedient. He was very shy. I remember the first time he came in, he came with his mother and his grandmother, who'd come from China. And in that family, the extended family was still intact and very important, and the mother gave the most loving and patient care to this child. I remember him crawling under the back of her shirt to avoid my gaze when I looked at him. And the grandmother, with the best will and tolerance, would laugh at this peculiar, and I think sometimes could have been annoying, behavior from the child. But with the greatest of good humor and love, she tolerated this. And over time, as I gave this child a single remedy, 4 or 5 months, he got better and better and went from a special classroom to a mainstream classroom. And I haven't seen this child for about 10 months. And the last I checked with the mother, he's doing very well.
Fantastic.
So it was a nice, nice case. But it wasn't just the homeopathy. The family environment was one of the most important things in favor of this child, I think, because the grandmother made space for this kid and reached out to him and made the first really special bond with him. And that she, I think she was really his first contact of love that he could feel. Even though the mother was a very loving and very good mother, that there was some, like, the grandmother was like a guardian angel somehow.
Right. I know. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. I know that John feels that the family environment is very key to improvement in his cases. But what about, you know, we hear about aggravations from remedies or other things that can happen in response to the remedy. What kind of things might a parent expect as part of a curative response to the remedy?
Well, what you can see sometimes is I'll look overall generally how the, from a global perspective, how is your child functioning and what is your child's sense of well-being? And this will guide me more than anything else, even apart from individual physical symptoms. It is common in homeopathy to have a kind of aggravation after taking a medicine. So some aspect of the child's symptoms can get worse, but usually only temporarily. For one example, I've had a child where I gave a remedy, and he had bowel problems, also a lack of speech and a lack of social contact. I gave a remedy, and he had diarrhea for about 16 days straight. And this was more than inconvenient for the family and the parents, because this little guy was, I think, about 4 or 5. And as he had the diarrhea, he became more available socially. He would make more eye contact. And this was a big step for him. So it was a lot of work for the family to keep up, because this poor guy was having accidents now and then, and it was hard for them to keep up with it. But in the end, it was worth it, even with that kind of inconvenience. And I didn't know how long it was going to go on. It went on for quite a lot longer than I would expect. But what happened is that the symptoms that he had somehow transmuted from one part of his body to another part of his body. So I think his gut got healed as a result of discharging this. And I believe a lot of metals and so forth were discharged during this diarrhea. And this helped the kid clear up in his thought and perceptions and to become more consciously available and perceptive of social cues.
So did he start speaking at all, or
He didn't speak in the first month or 2 months, but there was a notable improvement in terms of his interest in being social. He would respond to his name and make eye contact if somebody asked him, and he would respond appropriately in his receptive language skills. So he didn't have a great ability. He had a long way to go before he was going to start speaking. But even in the beginning, he had a good progress. Other kids I've seen, in terms of the kinds of response you can get all kinds of different discharges, fever sometimes, colds, flus, coughs. I think sometimes the kids will get a return of eczema if they had eczema around the time of vaccination or before that, or if there's a history of eczema in the family. Skin rashes can be quite common and also unpleasant, because a child can go from being relatively calm and seeming inert in the household to scratching a lot and complaining a lot about physical symptoms. It takes some thoughtfulness to be able to manage that kind of physical discomfort for the kids. But in the end, it's worth putting up with, because it generally progresses, and that discharge of symptoms or production of physical symptoms, while mental and emotional symptoms improve, they're a hallmark of progress in homeopathic thought.
So after that, the mental things improve and then they stay better.
Generally,
mental symptoms, yeah.
Yeah, they don't. Often what will happen is I'll find with a remedy that will take a few steps forward and then one step back, and a few steps forward and one step back, depending on how we're dosing. And it can be a little discouraging sometimes in the step back, but we have to take a very long-term view about what's happening with these kids, depending on where we start. I think these cases will go on for a long, long time, and we're all in for a lot more work in homeopathy in the first couple of years of treatment, and after that, usually much less.
So tell me, how long you usually see this treatment lasting? How long does it usually go?
It really depends on the child. There's a lot of different factors involved, and it depends certainly on how sick and the child is, and what other treatments the child is receiving, along with the health of the family in general. I think, first of all, the more intact and happy the family, and the healthier the family overall, the family dynamic, the better opportunity for the child to improve. And I've seen all kinds of combinations of different therapies work. I've seen acupuncture help children. I've seen chelation therapy work for children. Nutritional supplements, pretty strict diets, usually gluten-free, casein-free diets are almost always helpful for parents and for the kids, although there are a lot of work to do. I've seen cranial osteopathy work very well for children, and osteopathic manipulative therapy. Those also can be very helpful for kids. And speech therapy is very important. Occupational therapy can be very important for kids who are having gross motor skills and fine motor skill problems. And the combination of different therapies which is necessary to have a child become well is really varied. So the progress, it's not... The homeopathy can make a good bridge to get the body going again, but a lot of rehabilitative therapies are involved in making these children well. And even having individualized educational programs where teachers are sensitive to the child's individual needs and have the resources intellectually and within the classroom to provide an environment which will encourage a child to blossom. So a minimum of 2 years, I would say, but I think most of my cases are going to go on for 6 to 8 years, even if the child comes to me at 18 months of age with some milder problems. For more severe problems, or if I'm treating teenagers, I expect that the treatments will go on for a decade or more, and progress will be quite slow in the beginning. And my hope for some of the children I see is that they'll have a more independent life rather than a completely independent life. And that would be for the children who are more damaged, or for the children who come and see me after about the age of 8 or 9. It's very important to try and get an early start with this sort of thing and find some hope early on.
Yeah, let's talk about that, about the family, because I know you feel like that it has been a differential between many of the cases that succeed with homeopathy and those that don't. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think one of the things that I didn't talk about in terms of the style of my practice is that what I'd want to engage in with people who come and see me is a partnership. And I'll be a consultant about the homeopathy and the best way to use it. But all of the parents who see me are experts about their children. They know more about their children and what their children need in general than I'm ever going to. But I can help a lot with the homeopathy and some other specific suggestions or guidance about accessing other therapies or how to manage them. So the quality of the family life and the harmony within the family is a key factor here. I would say that the quality of my prescribing is relatively consistent, but the variability about the nature of the injury to the child and also the terrible impact it has on the family almost always needs to be addressed pretty straight up. So there's most commonly a tremendous grief, first of all, that I see in the families, in the father and the mother, and also in the siblings a lot of the time, where they see if they've been living with a child or a sibling or a child that's been really badly injured, that there's a strong feeling of hopelessness a lot of time, and a tremendous grief, and occasionally a guilt about things done or not done. And I think this is a normal reaction that any parent will have when something happens to their child. And it's not based on any kind of action or inaction. I think it's a natural feeling that we're born with when we look at our kids and try and do our best for them. I will see sometimes that if the parents are in a deep disagreement about the style of kind of treatment to give for a kid, that will have a kind of a negative impact on the outcome, no matter what therapy they choose, whether it's occupational therapy or whether it's biochemical medicine or a Dan protocol or something like that. Oh, this is one other thing. I think that some aspects of the Dan protocol can be very helpful at times, and that having that kind of monitoring intervention can be very helpful at times. Although, I have to say, I see people generally who have tried almost everything else and they wind up coming to homeopathy because it's less well known. And I've seen more people with difficulties with some aspects of the Dan protocol, particularly where the practitioner or physician is less experienced, because they tend to be quite aggressive in the treatment, saying, let's get going. And I see that the kids sometimes have had pretty strong reactions to some of the chemical agents, particularly methyl B12, that I've seen some kids react quite unfavorably to that. So anyways, getting back to the family, the issue about family is that the more harmony and peacefulness we can find in a family, the better the opportunity for the child to be well. And the family unit is the main place that a child will learn socialization and speech. And if that unit as a family is not functioning well, the child will have a very hard time learning to be social or wanting to be social. If there's a lot of quarreling or fighting within the family, I see that the children would prefer to stay isolated and stay out of the fray. So it's a touchy issue in my office sometimes when I see that the parents are grief-stricken and also in disagreement about what to do, because it's such an overwhelming kind of problem to try and resolve to help your child be well in this circumstance where there's no single roadmap to success. The roots for all of these children is quite individual, and it seems as if each parent has to reinvent the wheel for his or her child.
Yeah. So do you recommend that the parents get treated then as part of this process?
I think so. Sometimes. It depends on how open the parents are. There's a lot of different factors which can limit this, and one of them being finances and the amount of time available. I do better where I see more than one person in the family, generally. So if I see the mom and the child or the dad and the child, I seem to do better. Because more than one person in the family gets better, the life and the health of the family goes up. But the other thing I could say, some of it comes to kind of a spiritual question, I think, overall, about how to deal with this challenge that's come to your family, and how you can, if you have lost faith, how you can regain it, to have a kind of faith that things will improve and that your child will be well. And wherever parents find that spiritual rejuvenation or spiritual healing for themselves as they bear the burden of caring for a special needs child, that's also very individual, whether they find it through their faith in their temple or their church or with their pastor or whether they have a meditative practice or whether they go for a kind of therapy or a grief therapy sometimes or take homeopathy or acupuncture. The main thing is, though, that I see that the parents sometimes neglect themselves in spite of the and devote all of the resources to the child, when really the better long-term strategy is that the parents also need to take excellent care of themselves so they can be for the child in the long term, because it's a marathon. It's not a sprint to try and resolve this kind of problem.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons you talked about hope and maintaining this vision of possible cure or improvement for your child. That's one reason I call this show There's Hope with Homeopathy, and I discuss that in my book a lot, because I think the parents' intention, sort of the vision of cure for their child, is a big part of actually creating it for their child. I think that's really, really important.
I agree completely. I think that one of the things is that the more you can imagine your child being really well and your family being all well together, the better you're going to do. And that people, one of the first problems they have to deal with is a kind of hopelessness for some people, because they've been everywhere and gotten bad news from everybody, or they spent a lot of their money and a lot of effort with not a lot of result, not a lot to show for it. That all said, it's also important to be realistic about what the prospects are. I see that. I know that some of the kids I see are not going to be completely well, no matter what I do. It's not within my power to do it. And we need a divine intervention. And sometimes we get it to try and make the kids really well.
Yeah. Well, I always say prayer is very good, too. So let's see how much time we have. Let's see. We have about 5 more minutes. I'm going to ask a couple questions that I know that that people ask me a lot. One of them is about homeopathy detoxing metals out of the body. I know that there's some practitioners who follow these homeopathic detox protocols. How does that relate to the kind of work you do?
In general, I'm interested not in giving a detox for a person, because I want to treat the whole individual. And if the person becomes healthier, then they'll detox on their own. But there's a definitely a limit. The more toxic somebody becomes, so if somebody comes to me with one of the laboratory tests from Great Smokies or something like this, there'll be a very detailed chart about being high in antimony or high in copper or high in mercury or low in zinc and these sorts of things. And getting a child to detox takes a certain level of health, I think. The homeopathic protocols are quite variable, and they're designed to give a kind of organ support, which is not normally the way I would work. It would be a second or tertiary strategy for me to use that route. In general, I'll try and treat the individual if I can perceive enough individuality in the person to choose a remedy. But if I can't do that, then I'd be willing to look at giving remedies around supporting different organs. For example, in my practice, I've seen a few kids of late who have been very, very sick, and I've given them remedies and they've done well, but then they've run into a problem with constipation because their guts are damaged as well as their brains. And the kids have run into trouble historically because what recurs are old symptoms of a constipation and diarrhea. And in one of the more difficult cases I've seen, a child developed a kind of impaction. And this means that there's a block of stool stuck in the intestines. It can be very uncomfortable for the child, a lot of bloating and pain when they're passing stool. And you may not know it because the kid may have diarrhea but still have an impaction as liquid stool squeezes around the blockage in the intestine and then comes out the rectum. In any case, a couple signs you'll see is that the kid won't want to eat very much and he'll have great distress when passing a stool, even if it's a liquid stool. That kind of giving organ support to the colon at that particular point, giving remedies to support the colon, or giving even herbal supplements, things like that, can be a very useful thing to do. But I wouldn't rely only upon homeopathy. At that point, if somebody has an impaction like that, I'd refer for a medical consultation with a Dan doctor or somebody who's qualified in herbal medicine to help out in that circumstance. In this case, we had to give the child something called Go Lightly, which was a colon cleanser, it's something they use before they give somebody a colonoscopy. And it basically scours the inside of the colon, and this is how this child passed this particular blockage. But we tried everything else for about 2 months to get him to pass this thing. And it was a very difficult time for him and for his family as well. But once we got past that, we did pretty well.
Did his symptoms improve after that, or his other autistic symptoms?
He started to grow more. Overall, his appetite came back. He had better eye contact and was able to learn more in his ABA program. And he was generally more active, interactive, and vocalizing more after this. So it took a lot out of him to have this experience because his body was not well enough to generate a muscular response to pass the stool. He just couldn't do it. And I don't think that homeopathy, I tried a lot of different remedies for him, and I wasn't successful, actually. In that kind of circumstance, it's useful to use a little different tactic. I don't know that a homeopathic protocol to move somebody's bowels would be quite the solution there.
So one thing, when I was thinking of detoxing metals, like these homeopathic detox thing, I know some practitioners do these things where they give lots of different remedies for like all these isopathic remedies for all the metals.
Low potency mercury for mercury poisoning, or low potency arsenic for something like that, and low potency antimony for antimony poisoning and that sort of thing.
I think they do that kind of thing.
I've seen some of these cases. It's hard for me to give a completely generalized answer because the circumstances are so different for everybody, but those sorts of things can be helpful if you've tried everything else. But I wouldn't say that they would be the first strategy to try. There may be other systems of medicine which can be helpful beyond using that kind of homeopathy. What we want to do is keep it as simple as possible. And the more remedies you introduce into somebody, the more difficult it becomes to sort out their individuality because the remedies will leave a little impression or impact on the person and change their symptoms, even if you're giving low doses, particularly if you're giving it over a long period of time. And then it becomes more difficult than ever to find the individual person underneath all of the different symptoms that are generated by giving too many remedies.
Right. This is why I personally advocate classical homeopathy, where you're being very cautious and just prescribing a single remedy at a time based on the symptoms of the child. But like John said, using other remedies, for example, you know, various detox remedies or organ support remedies when they're needed, you know.
They can be. In these circumstances, though, you can expect that if the strategy for treatment begins with this, in general, I would think that the progress will be quite slow, very, very slow in the first number of months or maybe even the first year, year and a half of treatment. If that's the beginning point of treatment, if the child is so unwell that he or she will need organ support to support the gut or something like this or the kidneys or something, it's a long way from the ideal of homeopathic treatment of treating the individual as a whole person. And I would expect that the results will be correspondingly limited.
So it'll go much slower.
It'll go much slower, and the quality of progress will be much, much less. I've seen some circumstances when it's the best you can do, but it's a big compromise. And it's not the place I would begin. I would try a lot of other different strategies first before I got down to that as a kind of as a compromise. But, you know, I'd be willing to do it.
Yeah, but a lot of people run to that kind of practice first because they want to get the metals out, so to speak.
In a certain way, it's a very attractive way because it's quite simple to understand. And the idea of homeopathy, like cures like. So you would give a little bit of something that was a problem. But the difficulty is that homeopathy, there's more to it than that, and you want to look at the general global functioning of a person more than you want to look at any individual symptom. Almost always, I'll rank a symptom where somebody could say, I feel above my foot, or my hand or my skin bothers me. So the overall general symptom where somebody can refer to themselves as a whole being is always more important to me than any individual symptom. And when we go to giving organ support, we're only looking at a particular symptom. And those sorts of circumstances, where an organ is overwhelmed, can be helped a lot by homeopathy. But that kind of situation comes up only when somebody is very, very unwell and one organ is almost failing, as in this child with his gut was almost failing.
Right.
And we had to resort to a different kind of therapy. And giving a biochemical agent led to the solution that I couldn't find by giving homeopathic medicines, actually. So, getting back to this idea about mixtures of therapies and things like this, I also see that a lot of parents have done a lot of research on the web and read a lot about homeopathy, and they'll come asking for different specific treatments that they'd seen somebody else's child had done very well with a particular medicine or homeopathy, and they wonder why I won't suggest it for their child, even though the autism symptoms are quite similar. And in general, it goes back to the idea of the individuality of the child. Not everybody likes eggs. Not everybody likes bananas. Some children like cuddles. Some children are afraid of the dark. And I'll be guided by those kinds of symptoms more than I'll be guided by the hand flapping or the lack of speech or lack of eye contact, because they're more indicative of what's special about your child.
That's what homeopathy is all about. You have to be homeopathic or similar to the symptoms of the person. Well, I think that's about all the time we have, unless you have any final thoughts.
I think one of the best things I could recommend, and I almost always do better because it's a partnership with parents that I'm looking for when people come to see me, is do a little reading if you have the time or energy to do it. And I find that the parents do a lot better with a little homeopathic education. And one of the best books to read is Amy's book, Impossible Cure.
Thank you.
It makes the practice easier to tolerate when things are going slowly, because the parents have some insight into my line of thought and they have some understanding of symptoms. The last thing I think I should mention is about everybody's quite afraid of symptoms when they come and see me for any kind of complaint. And it's a natural tendency that we've been taught that our symptoms are generally harmful for us because they cause us pain or discomfort. And we don't like to see our children suffering with different kinds of complaints. But the symptoms are all we have to work with, and they're the body's really best defense and best answer, although imperfect sometimes, to try and resolve a problem. And I want parents not to be afraid of all the symptoms that their children have or that they themselves have as this goes through, because there's a beauty in the symptoms that come, even if they're uncomfortable, because they lead to the best opportunity for a solution. And to honor the symptoms that the body produces is one of the best ways to make progress and to become well, because you acknowledge the symptom and then you can move on. If there's a suppression of the symptom or a denial of it by giving a lot of different agents, Tylenol or fever medicines or skin creams and things like this, progress again is slower. And I guess one thing I've learned about doing homeopathy for a long time is, even my arthritis, I don't like the symptoms I have when they're stiff, but there's always a message in it for me about me changing my life a little bit to live more well. And I'd like to encourage parents, as they study homeopathy a bit through Amy's book and as they do homeopathy with their different practitioners, is that they learn to value the symptoms that your child is expressing and learn to read them in a way that will make great use of them to help your child heal. Not only to be afraid of them.
That's great. I really like that. So, I'm just going to wrap up now. Thanks, John. This was just fantastic.
Thanks, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to have you on again. Just to let you all know that the next show is going to be June 17th, and the focus of that show is going to be about preparing for your first homeopathic appointment and what you can expect. We talked a little bit about that today, but I'll talk a little bit more in detail. And also, since school's going to be out, my son Max will be home, so I think I'm going to do a little mini interview with Max so you can meet him and hear him talk a little bit, sort of proof that he's not autistic anymore.
Prepare to be entertained.
Yeah, he's very funny, so I'll have to tell him to prepare a joke or something. So anyway, in the meantime, I want you all to enjoy the final days of spring before the heat sets in wherever you are. And remember, there's hope with homeopathy. Bye-bye.